guys.
Oye. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Margaret Hartley presided. All my business before this court draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Judge Bartley, and I'm joined today by Judge Peach and Judge Laurer. And we're here today for the matter of Lewis Brown versus Dennis McDonough, docket number 21-3218. Counsel for the parties, please state your name and your appearance for the record, beginning with Appellant's Counsel.
Andy Dehakis for Appellant's Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Dehakis.
Andy Kirshner for the Secretary and with me at Counsel, Dustin Elias for the Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Kirshner and Mr. Elias. And as you know, each party has 30 minutes to present argument. Mr. Dehakis, how much time would you like to reserve? Okay, we will make that happen, and you may proceed.
All right. Good morning. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. On behalf of Mr. Brown, I want to thank the court for the opportunity to present his appeal. to begin, Mr. Brown appealed the board's dismissal of his notice of disagreement, and I think that it's important we keep in mind this important fact. The primary question before this court is whether his notice of disagreement conferred jurisdiction on the board to review his NOD. The AOJ issued a decision in September 2020 canceling his higher-level review request and telling Mr. Brown that he cannot request a higher-level review of a board's decision. But this is not what Mr. Brown did. He challenged the AOJ's notice of the board's decision. Turning to the questions posed by the court's order, we must keep in mind that this appeal is governed by the AMA, the Appeals Modernization Improvement Act. The supplemental briefing order began with asking the effect, if any, of its ruling in Encarnacion on this appeal, and we submit that the answer to that question is nothing. The pure implementation of a board's decision is an extinct product of the legacy system where the board issued the 5104 notice. Turning to the first question, the August 19, 2019 decision from the AOJ was not a pure...
Mr. Dehakis, let me just ask you. So you admit that you're challenging the AOJ notice. So what do you want to get out of this? What are you hoping to accomplish for Mr. Brown?
The primary objective that we want, Your Honor, is notice. We have not to this day received compliant 5104 notice of the Secretary's decision given by the board under 7104A. And as we pointed out in our supplemental memorandum, this court in Greer said that the board does not provide that notice, but the statute requires it for every 511A decision. It's clear that 7104A tells the Secretary that through the board, final decisions under 511A are given by the board. So the board's report, and I use the term report because 7102 tells the board to prepare a report under 7104D, and then 7104D gives specific information that the report must provide, but the 5104 notice is in addition to whatever information 7104D requires. And so the primary purpose of this appeal is for Mr. Brown to receive the 5104 notice to which he is entitled as a matter of law and without which he cannot determine how to proceed. So the AMA system, as Greer pointed out, was created in order to give options to the veterans, or to the claimants rather, and I was looking for the specific quote from that case law, but basically it was to help veterans better understand the decision on their claims and to help better inform the veterans' decision regarding whether to appeal the VA's rating decision. So absent this notice, a claimant lacks the information that the statute requires in order to allow him or her to proceed, to decide whether to proceed or to decide if they do how they want to go about it. And we understand the statutes to entitle Mr. Brown or any claimant to challenge the notice that is provided by the agency of original jurisdiction separate and apart from the underlying decision. And in the legacy system, the 5104 notice was provided by the board. This court was the stopgap where if they received inadequate notice, we can appeal to the court. The court can enforce the statute and say you must provide that notice. And then the claimant would receive that notice and from there determine how they wanted to proceed with their claim.
Is there a particular part of 5104B that needs – what part is it that he's not aware of?
Well, for one, Your Honor, the board has made certain favorable findings, both of fact and law. And those are not identified in the 5104 notice as required by the statute. Those in particular are key additions and changes from between the legacy and the AMA, where these are now, for the most part, settled law or settled issues, rather. Now, of course, you can rebut them under the statute, but for all intents and purposes, we don't need to keep relitigating these issues. The Secretary, through the AOJ at least, is bound by those, but the board's decision, report rather, under 7104D, does not require it to identify those. And so any favorable findings in the board's decision are potentially not binding on the agency after that decision until it appears within the 5104 notice.
So was it your intent to request higher level review of the August 19th rating decision that implemented the board decision or the August 27th letter?
The latter, Your Honor. The letter, the notice that was provided. Now, the decision was, for the most part, just a regurgitation of what the board determined. But again, it was not within, it was not compliant to 5104, and the notice that was provided did not include, aside from the favorable findings, it also did not identify the issues adjudicated, did not provide the summary of applicable laws, and did not identify the elements not satisfied leading to the denial.
I'm sorry, Mr. Dehakis, can you be more specific when you say the decision? Are you referring to the AOJ's August 2019 action, or are you referring to the AOJ's correspondence of September? which one? Because I thought the appellant's argument was that the correspondence of September was the actual decision and not the AOJ action that implemented the board's decision of August 2019.
And Your Honor, when you say September, are you referring to September 2020?
Yes.
Yes. So both of them, Your Honor. So the August 27th, 2019 notice of the board's 511A decision was defective. That was what Mr. Brown challenged to the higher level review to get to at least challenge and get compliant notice.
Okay, but this is a bit circular because
yes,
in order to have notice required, you have to have a decision, correct? So is your position, let's assume for a minute that the holding from Encarnacion applies here, the binding precedent that we have, okay? What is it about, let's start with the August 2019 rating action or decision, and it used the word decision, but let's it doesn't matter whether it's action or decision. What is it about that had a new finding regarding law or facts that could impact the Secretary's provision of benefits?
So we don't know. We don't know, Your Honor, because we still haven't received adequate notice. Now,
you can compare the board decision of August 2019 with the AOJ's implementation of the board decision. Can you call out for the court what is different about the two, specifically with regards to the findings?
So, Your Honor, the findings by the board, Mr. Brown is not challenging. Those we challenged to this court, which in a memorandum decision remanded it back. It's currently at the board. We submitted our brief last night, actually. So we should expect a decision on that any day now. The challenge with the higher level review was to the agency's notice of the board's decision. And that's where there's two separate things that happened when the board made that decision. The board made findings, material findings of fact and law in its report, in its 7102 report, and then the agency issued the 5104 notice. And it's the notice that Mr. Brown challenged to the HLR. He's challenging what the AOJ did or failed to do as required by the statute.
Okay, but doesn't that hinge on having a decision, which you look to 511 and see what the definition of a decision essentially is? And now we have, Encarnacion was issued after the initial filings in this case, before the court's order. But doesn't it all go back to having to have a decision here? And you still haven't articulated what it is that would be a new finding of fact or law that could impact the Secretary's provision of benefits.
So, Your Honor, and I think it's helpful to I think that when we look at the word decision, it has traditionally carried a certain idea, a certain concept. And under the AMA now, particularly after Greer, the 5104 notice is mandatory. And Greer says the board cannot and does not provide that. So it has to come from somewhere. In addition to that, when you receive notice of the decision, whether it's made by the board under 7104A or the secretary, the AOJ under 511A, you still have to communicate that decision to the claimant with all of the elements under 5104. If that notice is defective, the higher level review exists in addition to the supplemental claim or the board notice of disagreement to correct that notice so that the claimant now has the necessary information promised by Congress in the AMA so that he or she can decide if and how to proceed. And so we're not necessarily, with a higher level review, challenging any specific determination made by the board. Actually, we're not challenging any determination made by the board. And I think it's the notice provision, it's the notice that we're trying to fix with the higher level review. And because the board doesn't provide that, there has to be some way to challenge it. Otherwise, the statute is essentially a nullity once it goes to the board. And each notice, I think, provides a new determination with respect to a continuously pursued claim, and Congress's intent was to permit any 5104C option after notice is rendered. And if you look at this specific language in the statute, 5104C says, in any case in which the secretary renders a decision, the claimant may take one of the following actions no later than 1 year after the date that the AOJ issues a decision. So this statute is not talking about when a decision is made. It's talking about when it's rendered or issued. And those terms, both are very similar, but they basically mean to deliver or to give notice of. And the verbs of making decisions are found in 511A and 7104A, where 7104 in particular talks about the board makes the final decision on a claim. And
okay.
So,
if I could, with respect to the AOJ VA's correspondence of September 2020, as I understand it, based on the supplemental legal memoranda, the appellant's position is that that was a decision, in fact. And can you articulate what was it about the September 2020 correspondence that, in the appellant's opinion, made it a decision, thereby triggering notice, et cetera?
Right, Your Honor. And that really is I think, the more important letter. I mean, obviously, what the AOJ did with the board's decision, but that's the decision that we challenged to the board that the board dismissed. And so what the AOJ did in that letter is it incorrectly said that he was attempting to request a higher-level review of a board decision. Again, that is not what Mr. Brown was doing. He was asking higher-level review of the agency's notice of the board's 511A decision. And then it says, therefore, your claim will be canceled. And so we're not sure exactly what that is because that doesn't follow any kind of statutory language, But I think any reasonable person would see that and say, you're done here. Go away. And we're not going to proceed any further with this request. You cannot do this. And it's the legal equivalent of dismissing or rejecting your attempt to enforce, again, 5104B and 5104C. 5104B in particular says, subsection A2 says the secretary shall approve each request for higher level review. And this decision, the September 2020 decision, is telling Mr. Brown that we're not going to follow the statute. Your claim is canceled. You can't do this. And so that, as we pointed out in our supplemental memorandum of law, 5104B under Bates is within the Chapter 51 benefits, which when it was first enacted through public laws years ago was a law affecting the provision of benefits. And under the ruling in Bates, it is therefore its own law affecting the benefits, the provision of benefits under 511A, which allows us then to challenge to the board whether the secretary was required to accept his higher level review under 5104B.
But if 5104 notice is key to transforming whatever the August 2019 AOJ decisions into decisions under 511, then how come you didn't make any kind of notice argument in your initial brief?
Initial brief to the court, Your Honor?
Yes.
Because that wasn't the issue that we were challenging. As I opened up with, the issue that we challenged to the court was whether the board erred in dismissing the appeal. The merits of what he wanted to challenge to the higher level review or the merits of what he wanted to challenge to the board is not before the court right now. The sole issue is whether the board was required to accept and decide the 7105 in notice of disagreement, or if there was some legal authority, which they only cited to the M21, to dismiss their appeal. And our primary argument to this court was, and still is, that the board must accept and must decide the issue because a valid NOD was submitted. The only basis in 7105 for dismissing an appeal is if it doesn't identify the issue, and I don't think there's any doubt in the secretary, I didn't see challenge that he didn't identify the issue, which was, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, the rejection of the higher level review is how we termed it.
And so the whole line of case law under Donovan, I quite frankly don't understand why you don't find that applicable here. So can you just go into that a little bit?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Donovan holds what?
The inferior body can't review a superior body's decision. And that's essentially what you're aiming, it seems to me that you're aiming for here.
Not at all, Your Honor. What we're asking this court to affirm is that, one, Greer, and we really think, and I keep hitting on it, and I hit a lot of it in our supplemental memorandum, Greer is important and vital to understanding this case. Greer says that 5104 notice is not given by the board. 5104 directs that the secretary must give notice of every decision, whether made by the AOJ or the board.
Well, that was true even for Legacy.
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, the notice was different, but it was true under Legacy,
yes,
nevertheless.
But in the Legacy, the board's notice can be challenged to the court. Here, Ms. Greer attempted to challenge the notice, and the court said you can't because the board doesn't give that notice. And so if we can't challenge through a higher-level review the agency's notice, I'm sorry, the secretary's notice of the board's decision, and we can't challenge it per Greer to the court, then there's no enforceable right, and the statute becomes a nullity. And so there has to be some legal remedy when the agency issues notice of a decision by the secretary, whether given by the board or the AOJ. And so that's what we're challenging to the higher level. We're not asking the higher level review to look out.
But you could have challenged it had you received notice. The only reason you didn't receive notice on your initial I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. The only reason you didn't receive AOJ notice that you could have appealed up to us is because he got in under RAMP and didn't end up getting the original AOJ notice that people now, let's say a decision was made today by the RO, there and an NOD was filed, there would be notice given. But he couldn't appeal it. He couldn't do that because he was like one of the early on cases, right? He got into RAMP after the initial decision. Is that it?
You're right, John. This started in.
Okay, so this is just a.
I don't think that's exactly correct, Your Honor. Mr. Brown did receive AMA 5104 notice when he opted into. And it wasn't RAMP. There was another pilot program that they did.
Okay.
But at any rate, he did. If I'm remembering my facts correctly, he did seek higher level review initially, and then he appealed that decision to the board. But we have to remember that each time, because the secretary is making the final decision through the board, and so it's a de novo review of whatever the AOJ did, and in as this case demonstrates, new findings were made. More favorable findings were made by the board than what the agency did in their high-level review decision. And so the...
I see you're running out of time here.
I just have a question.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You mentioned earlier, and maybe I misunderstood, I thought you said that the VBA implementation was part of the legacy system. Is that what you said?
I'm not sure. Okay. I understand your
question. No, and because then I was going to ask is then, are you implying that that's not part of the AMA system then?
The VBA implementation?
I wrote down verbatim. Maybe it just was something that...
So I think what I think you're referring to, Your Honor, is that when the AOJ implemented what the board did... And I think a more correct way, because of the fact that they have to issue notice, is that they interpret what the board said. They issued AMA notice under 5104. And so they may or may not make different determinations, although it's still possible that they would. Ancillary benefits, as we pointed out in our memorandum of law under 3.155D2, the secretary is required to adjudicate any ancillary benefits that arise as a result of the adjudication. So the board may make a determination which necessarily requires the secretary to adjudicate ancillary benefits like special monthly compensation, like
Is that what the controversy is, that these ancillary benefits are?
Not necessarily, Your Honor, not in this case, but it's the question initially was asked, I think Chief Judge Bartley asked, or I'm sorry, Judge Lauer asked, what exactly are you challenging here. In addition to the notice, the secretary may neglect to apply ancillary benefits. They may just entirely mess up everything and not, I've actually got a case getting ready to file an appeal here where the secretary just didn't do what the board said to do.
But that's not what we have here. What we have here is pure board decision granting certain benefits. That decision went to the VBA, the Benefits Administration, for implementation.
Yes,
and they implemented it and told him in a letter they implemented it. And then that letter, short of a year later, gets a response saying, I want a higher level review. Well, what would that, just to play it out, what would that higher level review look like? What would it look like?
So, Your Honor, and that's a great question. And that gets to the heart of all this. The higher level review would review the notice that was given and tell Mr. Brown that it is or is not adequate under the statute. Does it comply with the statute? Which, on its face, it clearly does not. But at any rate, he would receive either the correct notice or he would get a decision that says, no, the notice is fine, which he can then appeal to the board, and then the board can review the notice. But without the option of either the higher level review, and I would suspect that the secretary would say that we couldn't even file a notice of disagreement against it, there is absolutely no review of the notice provided of the board's decision. And without that notice, Mr. Brown cannot decide how to proceed. He can't decide, well, if I want to file a supplemental...
Proceed on what?
With his claim, Your Honor.
What part of the claim?
Well, any part of it, because, the notice provisions under the AMA tell him specific information that, as Greer pointed out, and I think that the quote here is really important, so I'm looking for the... to help the... And this is from, I think, the congressional record, help veterans better understand the VA's decision on their claims and to help better inform the veteran's decision regarding whether to appeal VA's rating decision. That's the intent and purpose of the AMA, and it's stymied when the veteran or claimant does not receive adequate notice.
But he's done. I mean, they implemented it, and now that's done. So what does he have to understand? This was a radiculopathy effective date or something like that? I mean, what? So the board made a decision, the RO implemented, and you're saying he needs notice because he doesn't understand where to go with it, but the fact is it's concluded.
Well, it's not concluded, Your Honor, because under the AMA, he can continuously pursue the claim by filing, for instance, a supplemental claim or a supplemental claim. And without the adequate notice, I mean, without adequate notice, a claimant cannot make an informed decision within the intent and purpose of the AMA, as Greer pointed out and as Congress said, for the AMA adjudicative process. The option of continuously pursuing a claim is driven by the notice. And that's why the two amendments were done in concert, hand in hand, so that the veteran receives better notice to inform them of how to proceed.
I'm sorry for interrupting, but if the appellant's higher level review request follows the same record that was considered by the AOJ with respect to implementing the board's decision, how would that be any different than what happened here, which would be either recon or appeal to this court? I mean, it's the same record that follows the request, whether it's any one of those, an HLR going back, in this case, to the AOJ, or whether it was the other recourse which is available, which is a request for reconsideration by the board or an appeal to this court.
It may be the same record, Your Honor, but the board performs a de novo review of the prior of that record and makes a new decision, the final decision under 7104A of the 511A decision on the claim. And so as this case points out, there were new and different findings made by the board, which to date have never been subject to 5104 notice. I'm way past my time. So I'll save the rest, Judge Peach, unless you had other questions. I'll save the rest for my rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dahakis. Mr. Kirshner?
May it please the court. Your Honors, this is a somewhat complex appeal with a simple answer. And that answer is that the court should reaffirm the well-settled legal maxim that an inferior tribunal, within the context of the AMA, should not review a superior tribunal. Here, the board issued a decision in August 2019 that granted an effective date for bilateral lower extremity radiculopathies. That same month, the agency of original jurisdiction implemented that decision. Appellant then both appealed the board's decision to this court and then also later sought higher level review of the August 2019 implementation at the RO. In September 2020, the agency of original jurisdiction informed appellant that HLR of that implementation was not possible, and appellant then submitted an NOD relating to the September 2020 letter, which brings us here today. Appellant's asking the court to rule that the principle that an inferior tribunal must not review a superior tribunal no longer applies in the AMA context, and that he should essentially have two bites at the appellate apple, and the court should reject that invitation. This is so because the August 2019 rating decision was a pure implementation of the favorable portions of the August 2019 board decision, and is therefore not a decision for the purpose of appellate review under 511A. Appellant appropriately appealed the unfavorable portions of that board decision, but then in August of 2020, while it was on appeal, pending here, he submitted the request for HLR. On that request for HLR, appellant did not say anything about notice. He simply stated the issues laid out in the board decision and said, this is what I'm appealing. Then in September 2020, again, as I noted, the RO sent him a letter informing the request for HLR from a board decision that implements a rating decision could not be processed. Here, the board appropriately found that appellant could not challenge the August 2019 rating decision that implemented the August 19 board decision because a lower tribunal cannot review a higher tribunal.
Mr. Kirshner, let's say for a moment that the August 2019 AOJ rating decision or action made a mistake in implementing the board's decision of August 2019. In the Secretary's opinion, how would an appellant, a claimant, go about fixing that? Again, this is not the facts that we have before us, but if there was a mistake, how would the appellant go about correcting that mistake?
Sure, Your Honor. Looking at the record we have here, and knowing, of course, that this is not the case here in this case, first, there are three things to consider. We have to assume or presume that that's going to be an unlikely occurrence because, you know, what we have here is a pure implementation of the board's decision, and that is what the regional office is supposed to do in this kind of a case. And so there's a presumption of regularity that would attach to say this kind of thing is not going to happen. We have to assume it's not. But if it did, the first step would likely be to contact the regional office and say, hey, I think you made a mistake. If you look at the notice provided, I believe by the in the implementation, it says to look to the appellate options provided by the board. And then in the September 20 letter, it says, if you have a problem with this, please give us a call. So one would assume that a claimant would reach out if they had the decision in one hand, the board decision, saying you're supposed to get this, and they get something else, you would assume that they would reach out. Lastly, Your Honor, and if that did not provide relief, the claimant could file a writ at this court because really the agency of regional jurisdiction, the RO, is without adjudicatory power to do anything but implement the board decision. Once the board says this is the decision, the RO must implement it. And if the RO does anything else, it is in essence failing to implement the board's decision. And that can be pursued by a writ here, Your Honor.
And so, Mr. Kirshner, when the AOJ does implement a favorable board decision, is it required to give 5104B notice?
As long as it's a strict implementation, I don't believe it is, Your Honor, because 5104B notice is required for decisions. And as Encarnacion found, a pure implementation is not a decision. It is just an implementation. It's a ministerial act. And so the 5104B notice would attach to a decision, but it doesn't attach to this. And in terms of the yes, Your Honor.
And so post-Encarnacion, is the AOJ sending notice or?
I'm not aware generally, Your Honor. I'm only aware of what happened in this case. You know, I'm assuming the letters look very similar to the ones that went with this implementation decision because what the letter in this implementation decision said was specifically, the board made this decision in your case. Here's the here are the findings and things. If you have problems with what the board did, please see the notice that they provided. And it directs back to the board decision for the appellate review options, and the appellant here took advantage of those appellate review options by appealing to this court. So I think that, and that also goes along with the M21 provisions that the court was curious about in the order. You know, that is what the agency is directed to do when there's a pure implementation, to direct back to the board and look at that notice.
So if I may follow up, sorry.
Maybe there's some awkward wording, perhaps, in an in a decision. I don't want to use the word decision, but when your BVA implements just a pure implementation of a board decision and nothing else, maybe it shouldn't be called an implementation decision, but something like implementation information, or I mean something, you know, that right off the bat tells you this is not a decision, or just this is just implementation.
That's a good thought, Your Honor. I you know, having practiced in this area for some time, I think it perhaps is just agency inertia. This is how they've been implemented, through an implementing rating decision. But calling itself something else would probably help with confusion.
So that was actually the question that I had. If you are an appellant claimant looking at the language of that 2019, what was termed as a rating decision, and throughout it is peppered with the language decision, how would you know that this was a pure implementation or an implementation of the board decision just by looking at that? I mean, it's
yes.
Lost track of the number of times that the word decision
yes,
is actually in that document.
Yeah, I mean, it is in that document quite a bit. But I think that there is language in the letter that said this is implementing the board decision. You know, so it does at least give that notice that this is not something we are doing ourselves. We are not finding facts. We are not adjudicating. We are merely implementing. But I do agree it's confusing.
While we're on the subject of confusion, I'd like to invite your attention to the September 2020 AOJ letter, which used the term that the HLR request of the 2019 rating decision was canceled, the word canceled. What does the term canceled mean in that context?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not aware of whether there's a specific meaning to the word canceled, but given the context of the case, it was meant to inform the appellant that the thing he was attempting to do, which was to seek HLR of an implementing decision, was not possible. You know, redirect him to the other, you know, avenues that under which he could pursue an appeal. But it just says this essentially is not a thing we can do for you.
Okay. A question regarding the Secretary's position with respect to the September 2020 correspondence. So the Secretary's position, as stated in the memorandum of law, is that was not a decision. However, that correspondence clearly states that a higher level review is not something that could be granted, that you cannot have a higher level review of a board's decision. Now, doesn't that undercut the position of having jurisdiction? And that's what the board decided in May of 2021, right? Walk me through that. I'm confused, because if that was not a decision, then where is the board's jurisdiction for that decision from May of 2021?
Well, you know, the court always has de novo review over determining whether the board has jurisdiction. If the court were to find the board did not have jurisdiction, it could dismiss this appeal. Regardless, what's under review here is the board's decision and its ultimate dismissal, its finding that it didn't have jurisdiction, we believe is correct, because in order to have jurisdiction, you know, there has to be some kind of a decision at the bottom of the jurisdictional well. And here, because of Encarnacion, and because the August of 2019 implementation was not itself a decision, there really is no basis, no decisional basis for what appellant is trying to do. So the September 29, 2020 letter was essentially correct, because it has to come all the way back to the end and whether that implementation is itself a decision, because you can't appeal, you can't have HLR from a non-decision, you can't appeal from a non-decision. So the board's finding there in that this was not possible was essentially correct.
But wouldn't that September 2020 letter be a new finding of law that the appellant could not request an HLR of the AOJ's implementation back in August of 2019? Isn't that a new legal finding that is that could impact the Secretary's provision of benefits?
As I believe we stated in our supplemental, it did not interpret that law, so it doesn't have that hook to be a decisional document. But again, even if it were a decision, and the board could take jurisdiction over it in that regard, nevertheless its dismissal was proper because the result would be an inferior tribunal reviewing a superior tribunal.
But if under Encarnacion, I'm pronouncing it correctly, if the implementation is not a decision, do we need to reach the question of this higher level authority argument that a inferior level cannot review a superior level?
No, we don't need to get there if it's not a decision, Your Honor. There's nothing further.
Thank you, Mr. Kirshner.
Thank you, Chief. Mm-hmm. The Secretary urges affirmance.
And Mr. Dehakis, let's hear your rebuttal.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to start where the Secretary started in again emphasizing that this is not Mr. Brown seeking higher-level review of what the board did. Mr. Brown is seeking higher-level review of the notice, the defective notice that was provided to him, informing him of what the board did. And he is entitled, as a matter of law, to notice of that decision. 7104A clearly states, all questions in a matter which under Section 511A is subject to decision by the Secretary shall be subject to one review on appeal to the Secretary. Final decisions on such appeals shall be made by the board. And 5104A, in the case of a decision by the Secretary under Section 511 of this title, the Secretary shall provide the claimant notice of such decision. The notice shall include an explanation of the procedures for obtaining review, which was missing in this case, and in addition, under 5104B, the various elements. So, again, Mr. Brown is not asking the higher-level review to act as this court. This court already reviewed and vacated what the board did. This appeal is about Mr. Brown asking the higher-level reviewer to look at the notice, which, again, Greer tells us that the board does not and cannot provide to the claimant, and the higher-level review is to look at that notice and make a decision whether it's compliant with the statute or not. That mechanism has to exist in order for 5104 to work, in order for the AMA to work, in order for Congress's purpose and intent in amending the entire process to work. Without compliant notice and without a legal mechanism to fix that notice, the entire AMA system doesn't work. And looking specifically at the facts of a particular case may or may not explain or disclose why it doesn't work, but in all the hundreds of clients that I've dealt with, the notice is a big problem. I think eventually it'll get to this court, but we have to have a mechanism to correct notice, and if the board's not providing it, it's coming from the AOJ, because that's the only other entity within the VA that can provide that notice, and a claimant must be entitled or must have access to some way of fixing it.
Mr. DeHakis, I started this line of questioning with you earlier, and I'm not sure we came to any good conclusion. And I don't know if I communicated my thoughts on this issue correctly. So you seem to be saying this is a big deal. Okay, and I agree with you. Notice is a big deal. But the reason that the your case is unique because he's trying to appeal the notice that was generated after a simple AOJ implementation of a board decision. In a typical case, although I know there's sometimes not a lot of typical cases, but in the usual case where the AOJ was not just implementing a board order, wouldn't a veteran be able to raise the notice issue, if indeed there was faulty notice or arguably faulty notice, before the board and before this court? So the kind of like doomsday scenario, you're saying like, oh, my God, this is like destroying notice because the veteran can't appeal it. But this case is unique. I feel that if we held against you here, we would not be destroying notice because in a usual case where the RO is not doing a simple implementation, a veteran could still appeal the notice issue. So what's wrong with my thinking? Tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, Your Honor, true that in many cases the AOJ is doing something else. The board says service connection is granted, for instance, the most common one. And then the AOJ will figure out what is the effective date, what is the rating, send out notice, and then that can be challenged with the higher level review board, NOD, et cetera. But we can't leave behind folks like Mr. Brown, who never received notice at all. And he has to have that notice. 5104 tells him he has to have it. In order to realize the intent and purpose of the AMA, from Congress's own words, he has to receive that notice so he can decide whether to appeal, and if so, how does he want to do it? The supplemental claim requires new and relevant evidence. Without the notice, he doesn't know what evidence is new or could be new or relevant.
Let's assume that there was some sort of notice that you, as you propose, required. Under your circumstances, under your case, how was your client prejudiced? He got what it was an implementation order of the board and nothing more than that.
He's prejudiced, Your Honor, because he never received compliant notice. And he has a right to that compliant notice. The first element or the first requirement is that it include an explanation of the procedure for obtaining review of the decision, which he never got. He was told he can't do a higher level review, even though this notice was new and it was essentially unreviewable by any entity. He also, as we explained before, the favorable findings were not identified, and there were some. And in the whole list of elements through there. So he's prejudiced because he never received what he has a statutory right to receive. And I think that when we look at what Simmons talks about, the absence in Simmons, which talks about the prejudicial error, before it even gets to the, there's, I think, two elements where they look at it can either where you, I'm drawing a blank here. But before it gets into those two elements, it talks about inherently prejudicial errors. And a couple of the examples were given of absent notice. And I don't remember the exact case site, but there is one case site earlier in this court's jurisprudence that talks about the absence of notice being inherently prejudicial. And we would submit that because the notice was not there, or at least it was wholly inadequate, other than just saying, here's what the board did, which Mr. Brown already knew and had already gotten, it didn't do anything to put that into compliant notice. And that's where the prejudice lies, Your Honor. Turning to the M21-5, and we highlighted this in our supplemental memo, but I do want to point out that it actually supports Mr. Brown's understanding of this process. And here it talks about two actions in a board's decision, and on a full grant, which is something I think would the Secretary would argue this case falls under, it directs the VA to implement the decision, decide associated downstream issues like those ancillary benefits, effective date, et cetera, and then notify the appellant. And each decision, whether rating or non-rating, must include the notice requirements under AMA. So even its own M21 provisions direct the AOJ to provide AMA notice, which, again, Mr. Brown did not get, or what he got was so defective that it's essentially useless to him, which is why he asked, in part, why he asked for a higher-level review of the AOJ's notice of the board's decision. And I'll close just where I started, that Mr. Brown is not asking this court to make a ruling that the higher-level review can in any way review the board's decision. Rather, the higher-level review must be allowed, and a claimant must be permitted to ask for higher-level review of the 5104 notice of the board's decision, the Secretary's 511A decision rendered by the board. And if there are no further questions, we ask for the court to reverse the board's decision, find that it did have jurisdiction, and order the Secretary to reinstate his higher-level review.
Thank you, Mr. Dehakis.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And the court thanks both parties for their arguments. The case is submitted for consideration, and court is adjourned. All right. We have a special opportunity right now. So before the judges come down and greet counsel, I wanted to swear in a new member of the court's bar. Mr. Forbes, would you come forward, please?
As I said, this is a special opportunity, and I wanted to just kind of make it a little bit of a learning experience. This court is rather unique in that we do allow non-attorney representatives to appear before the court and represent veterans. And Mr. Forbes has asked and applied to be a member of the court's bar and to do just that. He's not an attorney, but as I said, our Rule 46 is somewhat liberal and allows non-attorneys to represent veterans. So Mr. Forbes is a U.S. Army veteran of the Cold War and the Desert Storm eras, and was a Russian linguist. He's also a former defense and intelligence contractor. And he is also now accredited by VA and has been representing veterans before VA. And now some of the veterans that he's been representing want to appeal to the court. And so he's asked to become a member of the court's bar. And so I'm very happy now to have you affirm an oath. I'm going to decide, why don't you come here so that we can do this in front of everyone. And so, I will now have you take the oath. I, Jeffrey Allen Forbes.
I, Jeffrey Allen Forbes.
Solemnly swear.
Solemnly swear.
That I will conduct myself as a non-attorney practitioner.
That I will conduct myself as a non-attorney practitioner.
And an officer of this court.
And an officer of this court.
Uprightly and according to law.
Uprightly and according to law.
And that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
Thank you. Very good. You are now a member of the Court Squad. Thank you, Mr. Flores. And we do have a training certificate here of your qualification to represent veterans in the court. And so,
Okay,
we are on YouTube. Right.
Court is in recess. Thank you.